Good morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group. I'm here with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our monthly commodity reports, our blog, and our podcasts. We'd also like to thank our good friend Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at ektinteractive.com. This podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, and market conditions, and is not intended to refer to any particular trading strategies or systems. We are not responsible for any trading decisions taken by anyone not intended to listen. Information is not guaranteed accurate. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivative. Today is September 15th. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Jim.
A lot happened since our last podcast. We'll put a name on it, Harvey. And why don't we start off by talking about the impact of Harvey as seen through the weekly EIA numbers, which I know you have some problems with. So I just want to go down some of the categories and explain what they have, and you tell me and you comment on each one. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay, so we know a bunch of refineries were damaged, and if I look at the crude oil input to refineries, I see it's around 14,078,000. This would be this most recent report as of September 8th, down 394,000 barrels from last week's number. What do you want to say about that number in particular, but also what's going on with refineries coming back?
Well, that number, most of the numbers on the report are not accurate. Through no fault really of EIA or the people that report, obviously they're under a lot of duress the last couple of weeks. So, I think reporting accurate data to the EIA is probably the last thing on their minds. So I think you have to take a lot of this data with a grain of salt, and certainly the that run number that's not right. Runs. I think the big picture for runs are that they're coming back, and I think unlike Katrina, they're coming back probably a little bit quicker than what the market may have originally forecast, and we could see that in the price response, because the market crude came off pretty quickly during Harvey. Now has rallied back, owing to the fact that I think these refineries will be coming back. I don't think there's been any long-lasting any major damage. It'll take through October for them to probably get back to full capacity. But I think the industry is doing a pretty good job of getting these refineries back up. But that 14.08 million barrels a day number, that's not right. I mean, it's probably over 15 on its way to 16 over the next couple of weeks, and then probably on its way. I don't think it's certainly not going to get to 17. 17.7 was where we started, but
I was going to ask you that. And also, if would you just talk about the refinery turnaround process that's at its peak in October?
Yeah, that peaks in October, and that's another, I think that's going to be an important factor, because some of these turnarounds may be delayed from October. There's already been a number of refiners that have announced that they're going to take turnarounds in the spring rather than the fall. And so runs actually could be pretty strong as we head into, stronger than we might have already thought, as we head into October and November.
Now, normally you'd say that would kill the crack spread, but we do have this issue with the Mexican refinery. I mean, that seems to be, I mean, it's in the news, but it seems to be buried a little bit. You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, the Mexico, they really had a hard time with their West Coast refinery, Salina Cruz. They had a flood earlier in the year, and now they had hurricane damage. And on the East Coast, Katia caused some damage to refinery capacity. So Mexico's refinery capacity is going to be cut again over the next few weeks, and if not longer than that. And that's actually been a pretty big swing in the global markets, all the way to the Brent market, and I think it's one of the reasons why the Brent market has been so strong, is that the supply that Latin America would normally get from U.S. refiners isn't coming, because U.S. refiners can't, the Gulf Coast can't export right now owing to damage to the export facilities, plus the refineries are down. So as a result, we're seeing runs in Europe pretty strong. And right. I think it's one of the main reasons, or one of the reasons, a background reason, why the Brent market has been so strong. So it's unbelievable how the storm can have unanticipated effects.
Ripples throughout the world.
Yeah, ripples throughout the world, exactly.
You mentioned the Brent market. Is it just strong on the front end? Are you starting to see like backwardation?
Well, it's pretty strong. The front end is definitely strong. If you look at the back of the curve, it's not quite as strong as WTI, which is something that we'll talk about. But the front of the curve has been it's been really strong. You look at 40s, which is a physical barrel. 40s has been trading like a dollar over the screen. So It's like the highest in 2 years. And the Novi D Sprint, at least as of now, is in the 20s or 30s. And what we're seeing, at least on the Brent side, is some of this floating storage is dissipating. So demand, incredibly also, demand for Brent, not only for refiner runs, for crude runs, but there's been decent export demand for Brent, even though Dubai is much cheaper than Brent. So, the North Sea is definitely tightening up, and we're seeing that in the we're definitely seeing that in the spreads. The other thing that's happened, of course, is that WTI or U.S. domestic crudes are so much cheaper than Brent. You would think that the exports would be fairly significant from U.S. And of course, we can't export because of the hurricane.
Right. Right.
So yes. Again, a lot of unanticipated. A lot of unanticipated things from this storm.
Well, just on your commentary, it makes me want to talk about three different things. One is there's also behind the scenes where this week we'll get into it later, but the IEA bumped up its demand by 100,000 barrels a day for this year. Is that correct?
Right.
Yes. Right. So there's that's sort of outside of the hurricane issue. There's something going on in rest of world, and you see that with the IMF, I think, has 3.5% growth for the world, and that's finding its way into energy demand, it seems.
Yeah, no question. These demand numbers, Jim, we had spoken about this earlier offline, how, sometimes the IEA report is just no one's really paying attention to the IEA report.
Yeah.
And this week it was like, it was headline news. I mean, it was bold-faced news.
I know. I always look at it as a contrary indicator. I think a while back they were talking about how the world was awash in crude and it was so bearish, and that was within a day that was the bottom of the market. So
right,
it's again they're looking at the previous month, and so that's a lot of times that stuff's already in the market. But this time I think you're right. It they came out with a bullish revision, and the market acted that way, which is, we'd always get to see the market react what we would call, I guess, logically.
I know. Yeah. I know. I think that in each headline, you saw that the IEA was mentioned as a factor. But if they're right, it's clearly supportive. And yes. they had some big numbers. I mean, they said the second quarter demand was rip roaring. It was up like 2.3 million barrels a day over a year ago.
Right.
So I think if you look at the macro, and certainly, as you mentioned, the 3.5% growth this year, what'd they have for next year? Like 3.6?
About 3.6, I think. Yeah. Yeah. But still, all these countries that have been, I think Brazil is going to be actually have a plus GDP, and there's all the PMIs are looking good. So, yeah, the world energy demand is bright, I guess. So going over the next year or so. Also, let's talk about domestic production in the U.S. The weekly number was up 572,000 barrels a day to 9.353. Are they coming back that quickly?
No, that number can't be right. I don't think. I think that those numbers over the next couple of weeks, and this is the other important thing, these will all normalize over the next couple of weeks, where we'll get a better idea of where inventories really are. I don't think that number's not right. And as a matter of fact, you have to wonder about the weeklies anyway. And this is an important point, because the EIA continues to revise downward on the monthlies. The EIA puts out weekly reports, and of course they also put out the monthly reports, and the monthly reports are a look back at reality of where the numbers really were. These weeklies are just weekly estimates, and the monthlies are more or less a better view of where we are in production. And the EIA just made a big downward revision to the June numbers by, I think it was like 150 to 200,000 barrels a day. So you have to wonder about these weeklies anyway. The EIA, the numbers may be lower than what we're reporting. And of course, what's unbelievable is how the market is so laser focused on these weekly numbers, and they could be wrong. Certainly, this week's certainly this week's is wrong. So here's some bad, could be incomplete data that's really causing a lot of that can cause a lot of hand wringing in the market on a week to week on a week to week basis.
Well, I think the energy economists and analysts that try to predict these weekly numbers have been humbled enough to know that it's really hard to figure out what they're going to show from one week to the next. And I'm not sure the other economists, when they miss an economic number by 0.1, it seems to send everyone into a tizzy, even though I don't think they can call it that accurately either, but that's something else. Let's talk about gas demand. I mean, we're going to lose. I mean, you see all those cars underwater, and now with Irma, we're going to lose some gasoline demand. The way that we track that on a weekly basis is through the product supply measure. Could you just talk about what that's showing? Well, start with gasoline. I show 9.619, which was up 456,000 from last week. Can you just comment on gasoline demand?
Well, that number you can almost say you can almost go with, and the reason is apparent disappearance is movement from primary to secondary sources. So that's basically movement from refiners and big dealers and wholesalers to secondary and tertiary sources. So if you think that week had the Florida evacuation, it's possible that there was somewhat of a demand spike. Again, that's an imputed number, so it's never accurate. It's never completely accurate, but I can almost go with that.
So basically, you're saying people were topping off their gas tanks, and gas stations were getting empty. So that's
right. So that's a big movement of, and we saw that. I mean, gasoline moved to Florida and then was consumed.
Right.
As you mentioned, Jim, I think that gasoline demand is, at least from Florida, is definitely going to have to be. It's going to be lower. They demand about 500,000 barrels a day of gasoline, so for the state. So one would have to think that, I don't know, 100, 200 maybe cut. There's going to be some spikes in resupply, and Houston too has lost some demand. But to counterbalance that, production, gasoline production is going to be lower. Gasoline exports are going to be lower, even though the EIA said they weren't. They have to be because they weren't exporting. What I see anyway is gasoline stocks have drawn by, I think, over the last 2 weeks by 10, 11 million barrels. I think there's going to be, I think over the next 3 or 4 weeks, I think it's going to even out. I think there's going to be a little more of a draw, but then we'll probably just start be balancing out. But the thing on gasoline is that even though we're saying that the refineries are doing a good job of restarting, there's still dislocation. They're not all up, and there's still going to be markets that are going to have some issues. So I think gasoline is something to be watching very carefully over the next few weeks to see how it behaves. All is not 100% by any means.
Right. The other thing is, if we lose a little gasoline demand, does that spill into distillate demand? Or do you think there's more trucks moving around now, cutting down trees and getting into those areas that, they're hauling all the damaged housing materials and bringing in, people to rebuild? I mean, is that, you think that's enough to show up in, will we see that in the numbers?
Yeah, I think we will. It may not be, it might not be October, but it might be November, December. We have some pretty strong, pretty decent diesel demand. So that's a great point. That we may lose gasoline demand, but we pick up diesel demand, and as a result, total demand is going to be the same, or maybe a little bit lower. And again, I think, as we were saying earlier, what the market's been telling us this week is it's looking at the hurricane as really transitory, a transitory event that's really not going to change the overall narrative of the energy markets, or at least the oil markets.
Well, I was going to, that's a good segue into the other information that came out is we have our big three reports, the EIA, OPEC, and the IEA all put out their supply-demand estimates. And we had talked about the IEA's bump up in demand of 100,000 barrels a day for this year. Did you see anything else in those numbers that kind of caught your interest?
Yeah, I saw that. I did actually on the OPEC report. They raised their call on OPEC crude for this year and next year. There were some quarterly increases by 300,000 or 400,000 barrels a day to the upside, and they too that's due to some downward revisions on non-OPEC production and upward revisions on demand. It seems that all three have the same sort of, you know, the theme is the same, that demand is growing a little bit faster than they had originally anticipated. But if you look at the big three, you know, and you do this call on OPEC crude, which is a good number to look at, it's basically what OPEC needs to produce to keep the market balanced. And for the second half, the call is just about right about what they're producing. It's 32.8, 32.9. And I think that probably jives with what we're seeing in the market. That would probably mean a balance to a slight draw in the market. Where they're going to have some issues is in the first half, where it looks like the call is closer to 32 million barrels a day, you know, than closer to 32 million barrels a day, which would lead to rising stocks in the first half of next year.
So your theme has been, we will probably be, stocks will probably, for this year, stocks will probably be coming down, but there's still a lot out there. So it kind of led you to a trading range market, which I think was pretty good. It may have bumped out of the lower end of your range a little bit, but do you still think that's the case going forward? I mean, we're going to balance to maybe drawing, and then I guess you said next year we could even build a little bit. So is it going to be plus or minus on this balanced market with still lots of stocks looming in the background?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't really look like things are going to be changed all that much as we head into 2018. You know, we'll see what OPEC does with their deal. They're good through March. They're giving indications that they want to extend it, which I think would be I think that would be prudent for them. And it does look like we're going to be in a pretty broad trading range. I mean, you may want to add or subtract a few dollars to the upper or downside, but unfortunately, we're still working through inventory. Now, one really positive bit of data that came out of the IEA is on product stocks, where they said that they had OECD product stocks only 35 million above the five-year average, and they thought it could dip below the five-year average in the fourth quarter. And you know, they're expecting fourth, because of that, they think margins are going to stay strong and that crude runs will increase. I think the record, they're looking at a record fourth quarter crude runs, which is going to keep the market steady. But, you know, alternatively, total inventories are still 200 million above the five-year average. So we're still, you know, there's still a lot, the crude stocks are still, this is still on the high side.
Right. And, you know, the only thing is that when you are if stocks remain the same levels and you're increasing demand from a day supply measure, it starts to look better.
It's right.
Better meaning tighter or more bullish, I guess. But still, you can't trade off of that all the time.
No, you can't. And so, you know, unless we have, and it's hard to trace a big change in the market for 18 unless there's some, you know, some type of event.
Right.
You know, that'll really gets you out of if you want to put a 40 to 55 big time range on it, you know, it's really hard to get trace something to get us out of that range, you know, plus or minus $2, what something like that.
Well, before we, since you brought up range, before we talk about prices, I just want to mention options. The RBOB, the gasoline volatility, peaked settlement vol at 45.3 on August 31st. It was trading around 27, 28 before that, and it's down. It's back down to around 30. And what was interesting is the crude didn't move. It was trading 29, 27. And when the day that RBOB peaked, crude oil vol was 27.5. So, you know, crude's looking just for, to me, that just says what you were just saying is we got this range out there, and even a hurricane. And obviously it's the cross effects of a hurricane. It takes out production, but it also takes out refining capacity, keeps it somewhat balanced. And the options, I used to use hurricanes as a reason to look at why someone might buy a straddle in natural gas and crude, but that doesn't work anymore because we have so much production, you know, that's not in the Gulf. Okay, so I have to say this, Andy, because the last two podcasts ago, we were breaking out of the downside of the price range that we liked, and you stood up and said, you know, we're coming into a really high demand part of the a year, and you just didn't see it, the market collapsing, and it didn't. It went back into the trading range. And then during the last podcast, I think we were talking about weaker gas prices, but you said don't sell gasoline or gasoline cracks.
Right. Don't sell cracks.
Because we're going into hurricane season.
Right, right.
So the KG veteran, you know, that was
right. That's a bad thing to do, to sell cracks in August.
Yeah, we have to get a list of like the top 10 things you don't do, like I guess you would call them the widowmaker trade. So
those heat to gas trades.
Yeah,
it looks so obvious, and they're not.
And they're not. Yeah. So let's talk about crude oil. Now I'm going to bring in options just to get your view. The D60 call has a 61,700 open interest. That's the number one option. These options have been around a long time. That's part of the reason. But many people thought that we would be up around $60 coming out of this year. And so we only have a few months to go. What do you think about that $60 call? Does that have a shot to go into money, or used to? Because you have been, I've been trying to get you to say, you know, yeah, you have to be long that thing, but you always kind of fade it. You just say, I don't think it's going to make it there. What do you think for the next 3 months? Is that thing going to have an afterlife as a futures contract, or is it dead?
I have to say, I don't see it getting up there.
You don't see? Okay.
It's going to be, the market's really going to have to be hard pressed to get there. I, you know, given where we are on, given where we are in inventories, even with an improving demand picture, you know, we're still, I think as we look into the fourth quarter, yeah, we may draw some stock, some more inventory, but I just don't think it's going to be enough to get it through 60, you know, unless it's event driven. I mean, you're looking at, I think it's pretty, you've seen Brent, and we're talking WTI, of course, on the 60 calls. I mean, Brent has been really strong here, but, you know, does it have another leg up? Probably not. I mean, as soon as we can start exporting some of the domestic crude, you know, that'll probably tamp down some of the Brent strength. So, Jim, I just don't see it.
Right. And speaking of that, we have crude oil cargoes lined up to come into the Gulf that haven't been able to get in. Now, are those going to be diverted because of that spread? They must be.
I think they will be. You know, if we look at crude stocks, there'll probably be another build coming up over the next few weeks. But, you know, there were some banks saying that crude inventories were going to build 40 million barrels during September. And I really have no idea what they were talking about. You know,
right.
That's just not going to happen. I mean, my numbers are like 15 to 20 maybe, and we've already had 10, so maybe there's another 10 to go, but not 30.
Right. So what is your let's just take it going forward, short term, maybe the next quarter, what's your WTI price expectations that you would, that you're working with, or that you see?
I think this 45, maybe 52 or 42, 52. I think that's, for now that looks like a range. I know it's really boring, but, the market's fighting through a lot. There's a lot for the market to fight through.
Right.
And, we're just not quite there yet. There's some, definitely some good things happening in the market. But alternatively, there are plenty of headwinds.
Now,
the least of which is, as the market rallies in the back, we still start seeing these domestic producers hedging.
Right.
And 18 and 19 are doing pretty well. In fact, DEIS 18, DEIS 19 on structure went backwardated, probably because there's been so much, there's been selling in the 19s. And, in talking to some of the dealers, a lot of the producers think, all right, maybe there's another dollar or two up there. But, if it gets to 51 or 52 or technical target could even be 53 in like the Cal 19s, I'm selling everything I can.
Right. So that should help. That would help backwardation a little bit, or, the front end if they've already done the selling. So, what about cracks? Can we, gasoline prices? Are they just going to keep chopping around like
this?
Yeah,
I think that's a big chop. Cracks have already come off pretty good. They spiked obviously during the hurricane, and, gasoline and diesel are down. I think they spiked well over 40, and now they're, in the 1920 range and headed lower. But there too, you got to look for, as I was saying before, if there's dislocation, they can really chop. I mean, not chop, they could be pretty volatile coming up over the next few weeks. So I think there's some continued opportunity there. I think the cracks are going to be they'll be pretty volatile. And I think gasoline has a chance to be pretty volatile, and diesel too.
What numbers are you going to be looking at very closely going forward? I mean, there's so many cross currents. Is it everything
I think it's everything. I think the, we'll see where runs do settle out. And if there are any, refineries that are down past, right now, I think the market is thinking, by mid-October, late October, this should all be, balanced out, but maybe it won't be. And we'll be looking at, I think I'll be looking at every number. And the continuing data that comes in, obviously, from the big three. We'll see where OPEC production is. Obviously we're going to see where OPEC goes on their deal. There has been some talk about them trying to incorporate exports into their deal, which I don't see how that's going to happen. And we'll be watching Libya and Nigeria to see if they continue to if they're successful in continuing to increase production. I get the sense they're pretty close to capacity right now, so I'm not sure there's much more to come out of those two producers.
And I guess we have to keep one of our many eyes on Venezuela as well.
So, right, of course.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to end with one more question. You talk to reporters. You're on TV in Canada. What are reporters asking you these days? What do they want to know?
Well, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, because it's so in the news, is the impact of autonomous vehicles and electric cars on demand, and so that that's really still a big headline news, and I think for now that's what it is. It's headlines and something we'll be watching over the next 20 or 30 years. But in one interview, I said really, refiners, it's right on top of their radar. We're talking about, how they're going to adapt to that. But, the key for refiners right now, at least today, is getting their plants up, is getting their plants to restart safely.
Right.
That's, but definitely the future is, at least from electric cars, is still very much on reporters' minds.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't help you if you're short D60 calls.
No.
You're not going to get bailed out by electric cars. Yeah.
Mach 55 calls that expire today.
Right. Today, right. That's also.
It's not going to help you.
Yeah. That option's got good open interest, but it's been given up for dead. So. Okay, Andy, that's great. Let's wrap it up. This is Jim Colburn with Andy LeBeau, commoditysearchgroup.com.